The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Big pay-per-view coming up this week. UFC 116. Can't believe they're up to 116. Fighting in the main event, the former champ, fighting the interim champ, Shane Carwin, on the Subway Fresh Tech hotline right now. Brock Lesnar. I still consider you the champ because you never actually lost the belt, right?
Yeah, let's get rid of that former champion.
Yeah, you got to lose the belt to lose the belt. You know, it's not your fault. You were hurt. I understand the interim champ thing, but I still feel like you should be called the champ.
Well, I am the champion.
Explain to America how dangerous your health situation was. So you were about to fight this guy, I think it was, 10 months ago?
It was last November. Yeah.
Okay, so 8 months ago. And all of a sudden, you just start feeling terrible, and your health takes a turn for the worse. They have to cancel the fight, and it turns out that you have diverticulitis, which I did some reading on this, and it just sounds horrible. I mean, it absolutely sounds like one of the worst things that I think could happen health-wise. How long did it take you to recover?
Well, actually, it took me a couple of months. I got sick. Wasn't feeling right in October, and that's when I actually had pulled out on the fight. About a month before the fight was supposed to actually happen is when I decided that I just couldn't continue my training camp, and something was definitely wrong. And so I went back to the doctor, and they wanted to do a CT scan on my stomach, and I was just like, well, it doesn't hurt all that bad. I've had some stomach pains here and there, and so I decided, well, I asked the doctor, let me just give me a little time here, and then I was diagnosed with mononucleosis, and because my body was, I was training so hard and trying to get ready for the fight that I just ran myself right into the grave almost, and so then I said, take some time off. So I went up to Canada, up to my brother's place in Canada, and was going to do some hunting, and the next thing I know, I'm going into shock one evening, and with severe stomach pain. So,
so it was pretty close to. I mean, you were pretty close there, to not coming back. I mean, period.
Well, yeah. I mean, what happened is one of the problem areas in my stomach had exploded or perforated, and I was leaking free air into my diaphragm, into my stomach, or in my stomach cavity. So, yeah, it's not a good situation to be in. It was very painful, and I got to take my hat off to the doctor that actually, when I got down to Bismarck, North Dakota, that delayed the surgery and allowed for the antibiotics and my body to naturally heal the perforation. Otherwise, I would not be fighting today.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how close were you to basically calling it a career and not ever being able to fight again?
Well, it was really close. It was really close because what would have happened was is I would have had to have a part of my colon removed. And, you know, that would have took about a year and a half, 2 years out of my career. So by then, you know, who knows if I'd have came back or not.
Wow, pretty scary. Well, I'm glad you're back. The weird thing, I was researching you. You've only really had 5 MMA fights, correct?
Yeah, yep.
It seems like you've been around for longer. But so in this fight, the big news is that you're switching to southpaw. Explain why you're doing this.
We went out and found Peter Welch, and I had, during my time off, I had to, a lot of things happen. I wanted to change a number of different things, from my diet to some of my training, some of my training staff and some of my training partners, and and because I wanted to evolve, you know, evolve as a fighter, and so we just went out and we brought Peter in, and we decided that, you know, these were some of the things. We gave it a try, and it just felt better, you know, it felt more natural to do. So
it reminds me a little bit of Rocky II. In Rocky II, he switched to I think he went righty and tried to do the fast thing, and then he ended up switching back to southpaw in the end. You're doing the opposite. But when I've seen you fight, and I've seen, I think, four of your five fights, you're the only guy I've seen in the UFC that I feel like is pretty much unstoppable. Because it seems like anybody else could, you know, physically could get taken down by the right move, or get caught by the wrong punch, whatever. And it just seems like, I don't know how I'd beat you if I was another heavyweight. Is there anybody else that has the physical advantages that you have in the UFC right now?
Well, I mean, I'm human, you know. I really, other than a few other genetically gifted things that I've got, and I surrounded myself with the right coaches and but I mean, this is the fight game, and anything can happen, and we try to prevent from those things from happening. And you know, there's this is a, and one, you know, any fighter out there is as good as one lucky punch, you know. So I mean, we try to avoid that and control the fight. If we can control the fight, then I believe that I can win the fight.
And it seems like there's a little more luck than maybe there would be in boxing, where for the most part the right guy's going to win. And this, you know, you even saw it with the Fedor fight the other day. You make one dumb mistake, or you stumble into something, all of a sudden it's over, and that's it. You don't get to get a second chance. That happened to you in the first Frank Mir fight. Going into the second one, did you switch game plans from fight one to fight two? What was different about the second one? Because you destroyed him in the second one.
We didn't change anything other than just sit down and relax and control the fight. Have a controlled rage, you know, and it's important to do, because anything can happen at any moment. And when you get anxious and excited and overzealous, you know that's usually when those things can happen.
Yeah, you went wrestling heel at the end of the second Frank Mir fight, which I loved. I thought it was fantastic. You took some heat for it though, and even Dana White was upset. I thought it was a natural sports moment, and that was just the way you felt, and it happened. Do you regret how you acted, or is that something you do again, or do you feel like, man, I was wrong?
You know, it was just pure raw emotion. I could have probably had a few more minutes to come off of my high cloud, but you know, it was real, and it wasn't something that, you know, no, I don't have any regrets. I mean, you can't sit around and ponder about things that, you know, I move forward and move on, and it is what it is. It happened, and regardless of who got mad or whatever happened, I mean, I'm in a better place now, I got a big fight coming up, so that's where I'm at right now, you know.
Because in boxing, they play this stuff up before the fight, and when they have, you know, they'll have the weigh-in and the guys will shove each other, and it always seems contrived. And after the fight, they make up. And in UFC and MMA in general, it just seems like it's harder to kind of let some of that stuff go. And it is more of a fight, and it is more, it does feel a little bit more life or death. And I mean that you were one example of that. But how much of the time does it carry over after the fight, and how much of the time is it like, hey, buddy, good match?
You know, this is a competition, and it's a fight, but some guys look at it differently, you know, as just pure competition. But when I step into the octagon, I'm fighting for my life. I'm fighting for my family. I'm fighting, you know, to come out on top. It's not a competition to me. I'm not trying to outscore you. I'm here to win, and that's my philosophy, you know. I'm here to hurt you and to get this fight over with, so I can get out of here without the least amount of damage.
Right. Well, this guy Carwin kind of started with you a little bit. Said some things about how you acted after the second Frank Mir fight. Here's a quote. He said, "He may be a champion, but he has a long ways to go before he earns the respect of a champion." And then he said, "It doesn't matter if you win or lose. It matters how you win or lose." Do you agree with that?
You know what? Regardless of what anybody says, I'm the champion. You know, nobody's beat me. I hold the title, so I mean, I don't care what anybody says about me.
Frank Mir, it seemed like by the time that second fight started, you really wanted a piece of him. Do you feel like you're at that stage with Carwin yet, or no?
Well, I wanted a piece of Frank purely because just to avenge the loss that I felt that I had given to him, you know. And
yeah.
So there was a lot. There's the animosity in itself. As far as towards Shane, no animosity. This is what it has to be, you know. And we're going to get in there and duke it out, and the winner will prevail that evening, and we'll all go home, and that's the way it'll be.
I am a big wrestling fan, or at least I was. So I've gotten out of it, but I still, when you grow up with it, you're always going to care. You had a long dalliance with the WWE. You actually won the title 3 times. I think you lasted there 3 years. You won the King of the Ring, which I thought was impressive. But you end up leaving because you wanted to play for Minnesota Vikings, and pretty controversial. You couldn't get out of the contract, all that stuff. When you look back at those 3 years with the WWE, what stands out?
It was a good experience for the time that it was something that I had no idea what I was getting myself into, really. I mean, I had never watched wrestling my entire life, and it just so happened when I got down there, I was, somewhat good at it, and it just kind of took a life of its own. And without Vince McMahon and the WWE, I would have never met my wife. I would never have the visibility that I've gotten. I wouldn't, have the star status that I acquired over the years, and I wouldn't have been able to make some decent money for a few years. So the thing I disliked was, I like my life, and I like to be at home with my family, and I wanted to start a family, and I knew that. I looked around the locker room and decided that if I was going to make a career out of this, this is my life, and I wasn't going to have the one that I really wanted, and so it was time for me to exit the building.
Gotcha. You know, the thing about the WWE and professional wrestling, there's no off season. And as you said, it is your life. You're doing it 12 months a year, and you don't get time off. Why do they do it that way? Doesn't it seem like that would be an easy thing to fix?
I don't know why Vince does things the way he does. He just, I guess he's got his own business philosophy, and it's worked for him. I don't know. I think things could be different. I think he'd have a better atmosphere around the business if there was some kind of a rotation where you could get some time off and people could keep their sanity a little bit, But I think when you're on the road that long and you work for, I felt like I was almost brainwashed, and it was like one of these things where you get up, you do this, you go to a different town, it all is the same, and he's got you in this routine, and if you get out of it, you might not want to come back. So that's probably why he keeps you in it.
So it's almost like joining a cult. The other thing is, like, you have those big pay-per-views on a Sunday, and then you're coming back 24 hours later. Guys have like cuts in their head and stuff. And then physically, you're taking these major, major bumps, and without an off season and without having time to bounce back, it just seems like that would take an incredible toll on your body. Did you feel that way when you were doing it?
Absolutely. I took more years off of my body working for that company than I have in the years I've been training as an athlete. Yeah, it's it's a grind. It's not for everybody, that's for sure.
And you also had one really bad bump that you took in WrestleMania against Kurt Angle. You jumped from the top rope, and you did the, I forget what the move's called, the move where you flip, but you kind of, you didn't have enough distance on it, and basically your head just went right into the side of his body.
I believe the move was called you are a dumbass. You weigh 300 pounds. Get off the top rope.
You basically knocked yourself out but kept going, right? You had a severe concussion. And somehow ended up finishing the match. When did you regain consciousness? When did you realize what had even happened?
Right away. I mean, I wasn't totally out of it. Otherwise, I would have never been able to finish the match. I suffered a concussion and saw some Tweety Birds right when it happened, and finished the job. You know, I was out there to perform, and despite the concussion, I finished the job. You know,
I watched a YouTube clip last night. You could tell you're out on your feet, but still going somehow. Was that the worst bump that you took during the 3 years?
Oh, by far, yeah. But I suffered, broken ribs, lots of... I had more surgeries during my WWE time on my knees and elbows than I've ever had, when you're in a car wreck every night, there's... good things don't come from that.
And it didn't really come totally out, how much abuse that the bodies take until the whole Chris Benoit thing happened. And I think that happened after you left. But, obviously that was the worst possible story that could ever happen. But it did seem like all the years of physical damage that he took and the concussions and the pain pills, stuff like that, and it just pushed him toward the worst possible place. When you heard the news about that, what was your reaction?
I was just sick to my stomach, It was just, I spent a lot of time with Chris on, we worked for the same company and it just wasn't good. I don't know. That's all I can say about it.
You roomed with Shelton Benjamin when you were there?
Yeah.
And he's still plugging along 8 years later. Who is the? Do you have any friends from that whole era that you remain close with, or no?
I still chat. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with Paul Heyman, Bill Goldberg, Steve Austin, Undertaker. We chat a couple times a year, really, that's about it.
Undertaker's still chugging along. It's unbelievable. He's 20 plus years now.
He's a lifer, man. He likes it.
How would you compare and contrast Mr. Vince McMahon with Mr. Dana White?
It's just two. I believe they're just totally opposite people. I think.
You mean you're talking about people or business people?
Well, just in general, Vince has done he's plowed his own road for many years, I think he's done it his way, and Dana's kind of the same way, but Dana's a lot easier to work for.
So you'd say you have a better relationship with Dana?
I absolutely, yeah. When you go through a relationship with Vince, you learn a lot, and I definitely learned a lot, Dana's been very good to me. Well, and Vince was good to me as well. I just, it was time for me to leave, that's all.
Right. And as far as similarities go, they're similar in the sense that it seems like they are the guy. Vince is the guy with WWE, and he stamps everything, and it seems like Dana's the same way with the UFC, correct?
No, that's the Fertitta brothers, they're behind the scenes, and there's three men involved, where Vince, it's pretty much his way or the highway, you know. I mean, there's no compromise. With Zufa, you know, you've got three guys involved and with, you know, three opinions and you know, with Dana, you know, Dana's the face of the UFC. He's, you know, the president, you know, he's the guy that's out there in the public. But, you know, I get along with all three of the owners, you know, so it's nice.
Interesting. So it's more of a committee. When you tried out for the Vikings, which I think was 2004, 2005, one of those, you got cut in the preseason. I think you got hurt, though. What made you want to do that?
I was just reaching for something other than wrestling. I mean, it was, I had competed, you know, and played a small bit of football, you know, in high school and had opportunities to travel and do that as a career. Had some, you know, some offers before I left to become a pro wrestler you know, I just decided, you know, let's give that a shot, and maybe this is something that I was supposed to do instead of be a pro wrestler, you know, so.
Did you get along with the guys?
Yeah, it was great. It was a great experience. It was fun. It was hard. After the first couple of weeks, I thought, you know, what the hell am I doing here, you know? It's one of because, you know, I was basically, these guys were in college, and I was in kindergarten trying to play catch up all the time, you know?
Right. So what made you decide, MMA and me, it's going to happen?
I guess I was approached to compete in it, and I thought, well, you know, if money was right and you know, because it is a risky job I started messing around with it a little bit here and there, and next thing you know, I thought, well, you know what, I could do this,
right.
And I think I could be pretty well at it, I put a team together of trainers and had my first fight and just felt alive. It felt like it was the right thing that I was supposed to be doing, and 3 years later, here I am, you know.
So it sounds like you were kind of drifting around trying to figure out what was the right thing for you to be doing for a good 7-8 years, and then it finally kind of fell into place.
Yeah, that's exactly how it goes.
Now, what made you get a giant sword tattoo on your chest?
it was one of those. I got a giant tattoo on my back, but nobody, you know, and it's the last one that anybody wants to talk about. I got a sword. And there was a time in my life where I just felt like I had this big sword pressed against me, you know, and I was in a low part of my life, and I wanted something there to symbolize for me to remember, you know, remember the bad times always, because there's got to be better ones ahead, you know, so that's the main reason for that.
And is it true you have the biggest gloves in the UFC, a 4X?
I don't know. That's what I wear. I don't really know or pay attention to, you know, anybody else's glove size.
Listen, I read this on the internet, so it had to be true. It was on the internet.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah, please don't believe everything you hear.
I would guess that would be an advantage, though, with the UFC to have giant hands. I mean, it wouldn't be like in the, you know, top three advantages you could have, but at the same time, to grab somebody, you know, and be able to get a bigger piece of them, I would think would be able to help you, correct?
Well, I just I like the idea of my hand being raised at the end of the fight. That's what I like.
And where are you based out of? Where do you live? Where do you train? Where's your family located? All that stuff.
Well, I'm in Minnesota.
Perfect. Oh, so are you a Timberwolves fan or no?
Yeah. I'd like to see. I'm a fan of all of our sports teams. You know, I like to see them do well. And you know, I've been in the state of Minnesota now since I went to college there. I've been there for probably 12 years now. So it's treated me very well.
So I'm guessing you didn't enjoy the NFC Championship game a few months ago.
It was a tough one. Yeah, it was tough.
Is that the most depressed you've seen the Minnesota sports fan base after a game?
I think over the years we're kind of used to it.
Yeah. Hey, it was, you know, I obviously get a ton of emails from readers all over the place after games like that, but the Minnesota fans, I think the thing, one of the things that sets them apart is they do talk themselves into, oh no, this is going to be it. It reminds me, I'm a Red Sox fan, so it reminds me of the way we used to feel before we won the World Series, but it almost makes it worse because you have your guard up and then you let it down and then you end up getting kicked in the teeth. But,
yeah, we need a championship. We need one from any of, you know, from hockey or baseball or basketball, football. One of the teams, please bring some metal home here. Come on.
Well, you might have to replace Prince as the number one Vikings fan because I don't know if his song that he released really helped them that much. You might have to step it up.
Yeah, that was a treat. That was a good song, huh?
I think they need your physical force. All right, so make a prediction for us for UFC 116.
Brock Lesnar, the UFC heavyweight champion of the world.
Hey, but you never really lost it. I mean, it's like we have to just... I don't know. I don't like this. I just feel like they should just admit that you're always the champ if you win, and we don't say, oh, two-time UFC champ. No, you're still the champ. I think you should fight for that. And I forgot to ask you, you've never had a nickname, correct?
With a face like this, you don't need one.
You just go with the first last name, that's it. That's my gimmick, Brock Lesnar. did they ever try to talk you into one in the WWE or no?
I don't need one.
Did they try to talk you into one, though?
Yeah, they tried to tag along the next big thing for a while there, you know, but I just... It is what it is. You get what you get.
I don't think you need one either. All right, Brock Lesnar. Good luck in UFC 116. Thanks for coming on the BS Report.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
One more thing in the UFC that I thought was interesting just happened this week. They thought that New York was going to pass a bill that would allow UFC events at Madison Square Garden, Albany, all these different places. It was the last state that was holding out. 49 of the 50 states are UFC-friendly. And mixed martial arts friendly. And they thought New York was going to be number 50 this week. And somehow it fell through, even though Governor David Patterson was pushing for it. So if you're expecting to see a UFC event at Madison Square Garden, which would be really cool, you're going to have to wait. You have to wait a few more times. Joe Mead.
Yes.
How could New York have boxing but not UFC? I don't understand that.
Doesn't make sense.
I've seen a lot of fights where guys got punched in the head a whole lot of times and something bad happened to them. And a few of those fights have happened in New York. And it's just weird to me. If you're going to make a stance on mixed martial arts, then you should not have boxing either. I don't see how you have one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, the people making the decisions must romanticize the sport of boxing from years and years ago and just not want it to die. And the MMA, UFC coming in only makes that more of a reality, maybe.
Yeah, if anything... I would argue UFC is safer because from what we're learning about concussions, the single worst thing that can happen to somebody is to get punched in the head, have a slight concussion or lose consciousness for a second or, you know, have to give and then get punched in the head some more. That's terrible. That's terrible for your brain. In the UFC, if you get kind of dazed or knocked out or whatever, they stop the fight and you're done.
And people aren't putting concrete in their boxing gloves.
No, they're not doing that either. I don't really get that. You know, I don't really have a dog in this race. It's not like it's going to affect my life if the UFC is not in New York. It's weird to me that when 49 of the 50 states have it, the 50th state would hold out for reasons that are unclear. On the line right now, briefly, the czar of reality TV, Dave Jacoby. We always have to have him on when there's a new railroad season. Started last night, New Orleans. I didn't tweet it because I didn't want to ruin it for other people, but you just went and plowed ahead and tweeted it today. So I had to co-sign it. There's a guy in the New Orleans cast who looks exactly like Rajon Rondo, and it's really disturbing and disorienting, and it ruined the show for me.
It's really disturbing. He's also from Boston. And I've never seen Preston from the Railroad and Rajon Rondo in the same room at the same time.
If he put on a green headband and a Celtics uniform, I would have been freaked out.
Yeah,
and it might happen.
He can easily just walk into the garden. Just with all he needs is a duffel bag and like some baggy warm-up pants and a gold chain, and he can just walk right into the garden. He can get to the locker room, and he'll get like, you know, Rashida walk by and give him a pound.
Yeah.
They'll be confused because he doesn't know the secret handshake.
And if to be Rajon Rondo, all you have to do is not say anything and just kind of be furtive.
Yeah.
And people
yeah.
think you're him.
I was watching the show last night, and I was like, you know what? I don't think I've seen Rajon Rondo talk.
Yeah.
Like maybe he sounds like this.
I've made this argument many times. He might be an alien. Nobody, he's got the freakishly long fingers, and he doesn't speak.
He's sort of, he's very reptile, too. Like, I think he's in the same family as the Geico lizard.
He is. His hands, when you see his hands in person, you're like, I'm not sure he's human. He might be from another planet.
Really fast.
All right, so what is this, the 27th Real World season?
Yeah.
How many have we done here?
I think we're at 26. I have no idea, to be honest. I just throw that number out there.
8-person cast. They picked a real bleepster. I'll save you the trouble, Joe, made of bleeping. I'll bleep myself. This guy, a straight hairdresser from California named Ryan.
He comes from a long line of hairdressers. His father was a hairdresser. He's from Tempe, Arizona. His grandfather was a hairdresser. His grandfather's father was a hairdresser. He comes from a long line of impeccably coiffed human beings.
Yes. And
it's a gift and a curse, Bill.
And maybe the most unlikable guy we've ever had in this show. I know it's a strong statement.
No,
it's early. There's been other ones that have left bad first impressions, but this guy is almost dysfunctionally unlikable.
I thought about it. You know, I did. And I said, yes, he is. He's immediately hateable. Like, immediately. Like, the second, you could tell even the roommates sense it. The second he walks in the room, he's like, hey!
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, God.
Well, plus they had the kid from Milwaukee, who is everything you want from a character from Milwaukee. He plays hockey. He's a little
plays
doughy.
Just me and my buddies playing some puck.
He's a little doughy. He's got like that Milwaukee type of haircut you'd want. Good guy. Girls are going to like him.
Yep.
Ready to drink. Ready to be your boy. He's going to get your back in a brawl.
Yeah.
And Ryan, the straight hairdresser, just immediately comes after him and refuses room with him. And so right out of the gate, you dislike him. And then it just gets worse and worse. He makes some anti-gay comments.
Yeah, that was a strange exchange between Preston and Ryan. I mean, it's again, like, I know I've said it before. Have you guys never seen The Real World before? Like,
right.
The first night is always a bleep show. You're welcome, Joe Mead. It always is, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if I was in The Real World, everyone's, like, getting dressed up to go out the first night, I would probably look at them all and just be like, you know what? I'm going to stay home and read this book. I've got to send some emails. I'm just going to sit this one out.
Yeah, I got to finish this book I'm reading. I'm finishing the new Henry Aaron autobiography by Howard Bryant. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Yeah. But tomorrow I'm definitely going to go out. we have to mention Mackenzie.
Well, they did a nice job with the girls this year.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Says the 40-year-old guy with a 5-year-old daughter. That wasn't creepy at all. No, but I mean, I feel like they went 4 for 4 with the girls.
There's an attractive young lady from Florida, Jupiter, Florida.
Everything you want from a Florida girl. Not that smart, little Jekyll and Hyde, drinking personality.
And do you know who has a home in Jupiter, Florida?
Who's that?
Tiger Woods.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know. I see where you're going.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, I'd say there's a 79% chance that she's hung out with Tiger. I'm not saying anything happened or anything, but she definitely knows Eldrick.
Or has been texted by him.
I'm going to wear you out.
And then there's the girl from Backwoods, Mississippi.
Who's great. Jimmy.
Who?
You know, first of all, we have to address the spelling.
Jimmy with an E at the end.
No. I might be wrong. I believe it's
Jemmy. Oh, it's Jemmy.
J-E-M-M-E-Y?
No, Y-E.
Y-E. Oh, of course. Like Kanye. I mean, two M's. She's the new Jen with two N's.
Yeah, I mean, she. It was a strong start for her when she said to one of the roommates, and she's white and he's white, and she said to Knight, I don't know if this was in the Coming Attractions or during the show, and she said, it was in the season on.
Yeah.
You might be the first white guy I sleep with.
Yeah.
Something like that. It was bold. Jen with two N's immediately had to sleep with three guys to counteract that.
And then, she said to her mother, this is her mother she's speaking with. She's like, oh, you might go out there and find a boyfriend. She goes, I'm not looking for a boyfriend. I'm looking for beads.
Yeah.
I mean, that's trouble.
I don't know if this girl should have been allowed on the show.
I like her.
Oh, I really like her. I don't know if her in New Orleans is a great match.
No.
It really could end horribly badly. And maybe if it had, we would have known.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's, I liked her. Good character.
I like her a lot too. I mean,
and as you've said many times, this is a feeding system for the Real Road Rules Challenge.
We'll see her.
And I think there's some greatness potentially from her. She's nice and tall, looks athletic.
Yeah.
In shape, frisky.
Yeah. I mean, you saw her ride the mechanical bull.
Yeah.
You know,
frisky.
She's on top of that thing. She's very frisky. And another thing, I think Eric was in an interview. He was like, oh yeah, you know, I think that that Jimmy and Knight are going to end up hooking up because, you know, Jimmy really likes to drink. And Knight's just got to pick his spot.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then Mackenzie, the hot little Florida girl, is like, you guys, I black out really easily.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Like, really? That's,
yeah, she's throwing that one out.
That's not a good sign. People that black out really easily are like, you know, 85-year-old dudes, you know, in West Virginia, not like 20-year-old girls from Florida.
The good thing is, if you're going to black out easily, yeah, at least you want a camera crew around you to really prevent anything horrible from happening.
Yeah.
So I thought I had a potential Real Road Rules people. I thought Jemmy obviously was
for sure
a first round pick.
She's a first round pick, and she'll get in because the producers know that she brings drama, attractiveness, and craziness, which is like basically the three.
Yeah.
You know, she's a triple threat. And then Ryan's going to be in there too.
Yeah, but he'll get. I mean, he's not going to ever get voted out first.
He's going to get voted out quick, but he's definitely going to start some fights. And
I do think Eric, the 24-year-old, who now where do you stand on this, Czar? 24, a little too old to be on this show.
I think it's on the edge. I'd say 25 would be too much, but only because of the dynamic that it would cause. Like, remember Andre on the first Real World, the guy in the band.
Yeah.
The long hair. He's kind of older, and he kind of looks at everybody else like kids. So you become like dad.
Well, that's what I don't like that part. I also think there's a competitive advantage because you've made your mistakes already. You've mm-hmm. done your dumb and drunk and dumb and happy, and you've fallen too hard. You've done some stalking. You've made all the mistakes that prohibit you from being a fun character on the show. And you have a general – you're wiser.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I want wise for my real world characters. You know how they have the age minimum for the NBA?
The IQ maximum for the real world?
I would do a maximum. I would do 23. And you can't – you have to have turned 20 you can turn 23 when the show starts, but you can't be 23 even going into the show. I would even say it's like 22 and 10 months would be my max.
We'll see that. Now that goes out the window with the challenge, though, because I like the vets on the challenge.
It's just a big advantage. Like, you have Eric, who's 24,
and you've got Mark Long, who's 57, but looks like he's 23.
Now explain this to me, Czar, because you're the Czar. Eric in the car with the girl from Jersey who played hoops at Northeastern, who had nice lips.
Ashley, yeah.
Who, as I watched this, I thought, this is a girl right in the Jacoby wheelhouse. Don't ask me why I thought that, but I did. I'm not going to apologize for it either.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't.
Jersey combo of hoops, combo of lives in Boston.
Well.
Yeah.
No, it was the five head. The five head did it for me.
So, randomly in this car, she's talking about her boyfriend of 4 years. On and off, whatever. And this guy, Eric, the wise 24-year-old, says to her, he was black, wasn't he? And she's like, oh, my God, how'd you know? How did he know, Czar?
Absolutely no idea.
This is why he shouldn't be allowed on the show. You can't know stuff
wise.
Like this.
Exactly. He's too wise. I think he just proved your point. The exact same thing went through my head, because I think there's a lot of the conversation we missed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think she must have given other indicators.
Like that he was also on the Northeastern team or something like that.
Speculate. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's because a lot of times you see in colleges the women's players date the men's players.
Yeah.
That happened at Holy Cross multiple times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that should have disqualified him from being on.
Yeah, I mean, I think we missed a lot of that conversation. I think.
And then we have the
uncut. We'd be good.
Then going back to Preston, the Rajon Rondo guy. Oh, we left out.
Here's the thing, man. When Rajon Rondo's watching the show last night, you know he just put his head in his hands and was just like, oh, God.
Why?
He's just like, really? And they're like, Andy's from Boston.
Yeah.
And he's flamboyantly gay. Like, oh, no. Oh, no. The guys are never going to let me hear the end of this.
Yeah, well,
you got a text from Nate Robinson. Hey, Preston, what are you doing tomorrow night?
Caught you at the all-male bar.
Yeah.
So
you get the Oz, Pressy.
We left out one character. There's one who's didn't really bring a lot to the table for me. Her name is like Sahar.
Yeah.
Had the guy she kind of liked going into it, which I hate. Give me 8 singles.
Yeah.
And then was on the computer almost immediately and wasn't that friendly. And it's just like they always have to have the wet blanket roommate.
Yeah. And I think they're doing the diversity thing, like Muslim demographic. Like let's bring the sheltered Muslim young lady and sort of fish out of water her in the middle of Mardi Gras and see if she opens up or closes.
Well, again, you're the czar. Have they done that before? I don't remember.
Yeah, they did in Brooklyn with I forget her name right now.
Oh,
from
I know.
Long Island.
Yep.
Yeah, they did a little bit with her. She was kind of the, like, never lived away from home, like, you know, sort of values and such. But I think this Sahar was like, oh yeah, I met him like a month ago.
Yeah.
Like her boyfriend, like, oh yeah, that's gonna last while you're in the real world in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's not strong.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Are you happy to be back in New Orleans after, I think it's been 10 solid years since David and Come On Be My Baby Tonight?
Yeah, I am happy. I mean, like, not just this is a bit of a resurgence for the real world. I think it was a really good episode last night. I think they casted it really well. I'm excited to see the next one. I didn't feel that way about the last couple, to be honest. This is sort of a Grant Hill year for the real world.
They got together with the Phoenix Suns training staff.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, when you think about it, I mean, I wasn't crazy. I never like going back to the same city. But if you're using the Super Bowl analogy of only 3 or 4 cities should host the Super Bowl for these reasons, then I guess it should go for a real world as well. And
yeah.
I may have even written that and just forgotten it. But San Diego is always going to be good. New Orleans is always going to be good. Miami's always going to be good. Vegas is always going to be good. Those are just, you just know, you're in safe hands with those cities for debauchery and craziness and all the stuff we want from a show like this.
Yeah.
As a 40-year-old man.
what do you think looking forward? What do you think of this season on?
Well, we have, I thought it was a very weak this season on ...
Yeah.
Not enough hooking up. Didn't seem like the cast is really that friendly with each other. And the toothbrush thing is going to be weird.
That's really going to be weird. I don't even know. I mean,
you don't know the story, people listening. So Preston, the Rajon Rondo pees on Ryan's toothbrush and flushes and scrubs the toilet with it and then puts it back in his toothpaste thing. And Ryan ends up getting sick from it. Allegedly.
Who knows?
Allegedly.
I don't know. The whole thing sounds fishy. I want to see it play out before I give my opinion on it.
Yeah, after seeing Ryan in that first show, it wouldn't be surprising if you made the whole thing up.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, though. Quickly, did you see the Jersey Shore trailer?
I did not. Where was that?
Oh, all over the internet?
Why don't you describe it? I've been traveling for the last couple of days. Why don't you describe it for us?
The Jersey Shore trailer is, it starts out, it's like a snow scene in New York, you know, and everyone's all sad. So they like go typical, like, let's go to Miami. And they bring the cast back together. And, you know, I still stand by that they need a fresh cast, you know? Like, I really stand by that. And I think that the Jersey Shore thing could go on forever. But with this one cast, it can only go as far as, you know, like we're not watching Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton on Farms anymore. You know what I mean?
I think I said this last year when we discussed it. I used the Osbournes as a comparison.
Yeah.
Once the self-awareness comes in and once a level of fame hits, it's not the same show anymore. It's impossible to replicate. And also, you know, we get tired of them after the first season. And I agree with you. They should have franchised it. They should have done one in Massachusetts.
Exactly. That's all happening. You know they're doing that. Did I send you that article?
Yeah.
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 They're doing everything.
Yeah, I don't think they needed it. And supposedly TMZ said that they're getting rid of like half the Jersey Shore cast after season 2 because they weren't really that good.
Yeah, that's what they should be doing. That's what they should be doing. But so what's happened, though, is when you see them, you're kind of like, oh, you guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do like these guys. You know what I mean? Like as much as I was like, get a new cast. And I watched them in the trailer. I was like, oh, look at that.
Right.
Oh, sweet Sammy the Sweetheart and Ronnie. A little tension there. You know, it was fun. But now they're famous.
Yeah.
So when they go out, like you can tell, like they're being swarmed with girls.
Ooh.
It's not like last time where the people are like, why are these cameras in here? You know, like who's that guy? Now it's like, oh, the situation's here, you know?
Do you think the move was to give the situation just like a Flavor of Love type show?
I don't think so.
Spin him off. He's by himself. Maybe he has Pauly D as a sidekick. And they're trying to find women or something.
I don't like those shows that are all kind of structured within the confines of one house. You know what I mean? I like to see situation interact with fellow human beings that may not be
of his ilk. Love house. You'll watch anybody interact in a house.
Yeah.
What did you think of my idea to have Simon Cowell produce a show called American Striker, based off American Idol, to try to find the U.S. a striker for the 2014 World Cup team?
I don't think it's going to work.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to work. I did appreciate your World Cup article.
It's a good title, though, right? American Striker. At least my title is good.
It makes me think about jet planes. American Striker.
Next on American Striker, penalty kicks. Any other shows you're watching, Zar? Because we got to go.
Yeah, I'm watching everything. I mean, I'm watching the Top Shots thing, which is like, it's like shooting competition reality show. I'm watching Real Housewives of New Jersey. I'm watching, I finally finished up Basketball Wives. I love that. And I'm way into True Blood. True Blood all day. I can't believe you never jumped on the train. You should.
I heard about the 360 head sex scene, though.
Yeah. Say it again. Say it again out loud.
360-degree head turn sex scene.
Yeah, I heard about the 360-degree head turn sex scene. It's a good show right there.
I don't know how you top that. I mean, I guess you could do a 720.
Is this like pro skateboarding?
No bachelorette for you though.
No, I can't watch it when it's a bunch of dudes and one girl, unless I'm really into the girl, and I'm not. I can watch it when it's a bunch of girls and one dude.
Listen, some people have 30 Rock as their favorite comedy. Some people have The Office.
Yeah.
For me, it's The Bachelorette.
The Bachelorette.
I think it's one of the most brilliant comedies that American TV has produced in the last 30 years.
I'd
put it against Mary Tyler Moore. I'd put it against Cheers, Seinfeld. You name it. You watch the finale?
I'll watch the finale. I'll check that out.
All right. Czar, Dave Jacoby, as always.
My man. See you at the ESPYs.
All right.
Target the channel. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.